Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. Shay, how are you doing today, March 25th, 11:40 a.m., roughly?
Yes, 11:40 a.m., March 25th, one day after Matty B's birthday. Everybody wish Matty B a happy birthday. He's 22 now, a young buck. Graduated college while he was still in high school.
A little older than 22, but yeah, I'll take it. As long as I can get away with being young, we'll be young.
We'll hang out with older people like me, and then you are younger exactly. By default. You're the young person. Yeah. A couple of housekeeping notes. Yes, Matthew's birthday. By all, we'll extend it till today as well. So happy birthday to Matthew. And things that Matthew loves, basketball, AAU season is in full swing. Matty B is back. Mm-hmm. Out there in BR coaching Red Storm. For those of you that are in the Red Storm organization or play against them, keep an eye out on the sidelines. The man's got a clipboard. Are you got a clipboard? What are you doing on the sidelines?
I mean, yeah, we do. I have a clipboard. A lot of what I do is I do the sub. So I'm an assistant. I do the subbing because the head
coach. Well, I didn't lead with head coach. That was understand. You outed yourself there. I was going to leave it to their imagination.
No, the head coach likes focusing on the game, and I'm the obviously I give him feedback and whatnot stuff, but yeah, a lot of mine's the substituting, which is hectic when you try to play everybody, you know, in an AAU setting and competitive games.
Well, nobody wants to come out.
Exactly. Yeah.
So do they come out?
Yeah, they come out. You just gotta encourage them. They're ninth graders, so you gotta, you know, deal with all the emotions of being a ninth grader.
Are you the Bob Starkey to Kim Mulkey?
Exactly. It's exactly what I am.
Exactly. One of the most respected coaches in the history of women's basketball. And not Mulkey, but Starkey. That is Matthew B. on the local Baton Rouge AAU scene. More things that Matthew loves. The women made the Sweet 16. How about that, Matty B.? You called it. Middle Tennessee State would beat Louisville. Then LSU would beat Middle Tennessee State. Yep. That played out. It was close for a little bit. Until the second half, it was close. But boy, did LSU not just absolutely pour it on them. The PMAC was rocking. They won by nearly 30, and they will head to the Sweet 16. And we're recording this on Monday. So UCLA and Creighton, I believe, right?
Play tonight. Yeah.
And UCLA, a 2 seed. If they win, that'll obviously be a tough matchup. If they lose, it'll be another lower seeded team that LSU gets to face. And wrapping up with Matthew, really loves basketball, obviously, is his true passion. The Spurs, last time we gave an update, were second to last in the NBA. They have moved up to third. If we erase conferences completely, they are now better than both the Pistons and the Wizards overall. So yes. At least you've got that going for you. And you get a lot of run each night on SportsCenter and everything because it's Wimby time every time
exactly.
He plays.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you for the full rundown of
Future's Bright. Future's bright in San Antonio, and he's wearing the Bengal Tiger hat today. For those not watching on YouTube, shout out to a number of folks at the basketball games over the past week that I saw wearing them. Trav, Mamu, a number of others I spotted in their Bengal Tiger Founders Club hats. So shout out to them. Okay, happy birthday, Matty B. Before your birthday, we went out and watched practice. There will be 15 practices this spring for LSU football. Two of them, Brian Kelly's letting us watch the entirety of practice. So We were out there on Saturday. Matty B did a good story on the depth chart defensively, because that's what a lot of people care about. All the way to the 3 deep gives you kind of a feel for what they have. Strong at some positions, kind of thinner at others. But we'll roll through some of that today. And then I did kind of a recap piece of what I saw. But we can kick it off kind of wherever you want. Matty B, birthday boy. What side of the ball shall we start?
We can start on defense because that's like you said, that's where I did my full 3 deep on. And I think that's where I spent a lot of my focus throughout that practice watching. And I don't know if that's intentional or if that's just kind of where I'm more interested going into the year. Obviously, the full coaching change, the personnel changes, the players you lost, and the talent that they have. But yeah, defense is where I want to start. I think for those who didn't go look at my depth chart piece, like I said, three deep, usually it's a two deep, but they did full first unit, second unit, third unit. Now, you know, some of those players went in and out with other units and whatnot, but this is at this point as good as you're going to get for a three deep on defense. And the starters were not a surprise, right? It was what we expected. Savion, Jacobian, Jalen Lee, Braden Swinson, Penn, Perkins, Burns. Now Burns at the star position we'll talk about, but Toviano, Stamps, Gilbert, and Sage Ryan at safety. So I think like the starting lineup in itself, those 11 is not a surprise. The biggest surprise to me, and I think to us, was watching that 11-11, seeing Major Burns drop down either in the box or at the nickel spot, and where he's playing that star position, which I describe as like a really aggressive nickel almost. Not quite a Sam, but like a really aggressive nickel. And Sage dropping back to safety. So I think that's where we start with kind of when looking at practice, being like, all right, that is something tangible that Blake Baker gets in. What is this, practice 4 or 5 for them? Already trying to shake things up and looking at Sage Ryan as like, hey, you know, you may not be suited for this star position because you have to be able, you know, a little bigger, but Major checks that box and Sage, you can drop back. And lo and behold, Sage Ryan ends the day with 3 interceptions and, you know, was, I guess, the standout on the day.
Definitely. I mean, Sage getting a few picks. I thought those were what you mentioned were the two notable things. Look, people are saying, what are they going to do with Major Burns? He was a liability a year ago, all of this stuff. I said it on the pod before, and I've said it on the site. Outside of Greg Penn, nobody has started more games on defense for LSU than Major Burns. So when you're facing issues like LSU is, and I'll give my thoughts here in a second from sort of a, you know, 1,000-foot view here, but on the ground, they don't have a ton of options, right? Matty B, yes, you hired 5 new coaches. I'll talk about this in a second, but a lot of the players are the same. So benching your most experienced player in the secondary when the secondary is your worst performing unit doesn't seem like the route to go. Now, what Blake Baker, the new DC, has done, and probably with the assistance from the secondary staff, Corey Raymond, Jake Olson, has moved Major Burns from safety down to this star position, which we kind of view it as a nickel, if you will, an extra defensive back who moves down further, closer to the line of scrimmage. And from talking to people close to Major, this is something he's comfortable with. It gives him a little more freedom. He's not that last line of defense for him, and he seems comfortable in that role. And it's twofold in a good way, Matty B, right? Because, yes, Sage Ryan had some picks in practice. That's great. More importantly, I think everyone can agree, Sage's natural position is safety. They had played him at nickel. That's fine. When he had to be their starting cornerback, he's truly out of position. So I really like that he's back at safety, playing with Jordan Gilbert, A&M transfer who played at U High here on campus. I like both those guys. The move from Burns to nickel, or as you said, the star role, was the most notable thing because we can go over the corners. They have a lot of them right now, and they're sort of working through the group. But at safety, we have a good feel that those three guys, Gilbert, Major, and Sage, who are all veterans, all older guys, are going to be your main pieces, right? I mean, we saw a year ago, they played 2 safeties every snap of every game. Major Burns and Andre Sam never left the field, really. I mean, Ryan Yates would play a little. Jordan Allen would play a little. Kylan Jackson at the end played a little. But it was nothing that took them off the field. Now I feel like we're in a maybe similar spot, potentially see more rotation. But we know the three. The three safeties, or 2 safeties and nickel, are those guys.
Yeah, to your point, Burns and Sam, I believe, led the team in snaps last year on defense. It was like 750 or so.
Oh, it was a ridiculous number.
Yeah. So I think that you're correct in that. Ryan and Gilbert, when you think of both of them, I personally think of coverage guys, and maybe not man coverage guys, but more, like you said, zone. And I think we saw it in practice with the interceptions that Sage did have. A lot of them were kind of just playing his zone. One of them was Nussmeier threw a deep ball and the wind held it up, you know, a few yards, and he was in position as a safety to go over and make a play on it. So That's where you hope Sage Ryan, when he sees the field, he can read and react. He can show off that athleticism that made him a five-star prospect. That safety ability. And I think, you know, last year, Brian Kelly talked about a lot. He was a good tackler. So Major struggled in that area. So maybe if you get him closer to the line of scrimmage, you take away some of the, you know, build up to where you have like a 5-yard running head start and then trying to make a tackle. If you're just already on the ball, kind of, maybe you're a little bit more adept to making those plays. At the end of the day, I think Burns needed some sort of shakeup, and this could be a really, really good change of scenery for him. So I think that's a good starting point. Start with the safeties and the nickel and that change. If we do want to jump to corner real quick, my biggest takeaway wasn't even on the field.
And I will say, too, Jarden would be viewed as your Gilbert, who came from A&M, but a Baton Rouge native, played at U High. Really, LSU should have gotten him out of high school. They kind of slow played that. But he'd be your box safety. He's the big physical presence. And you see him in uniform. He's cut down weight. I had heard he was over, like, pushing 210, and now he's kind of right at 200, if not under, but you see he's really muscled up. So he's your physical presence at safety, no doubt.
Yeah. At corner, the biggest takeaway for me was Brian Kelly kind of being real non-committal, which isn't a bad thing, but him being like, hey, we're going to need 3, 4, 5 corners here. Even going into the fall, we're going to need all these guys to play. We're going to be better than the sum of our parts, or I forget how that saying goes, but we're going to have to need everybody here to play their role and to come in. And I think while that is concerning, I think everybody understands the situation they're at cornerback. They don't have high level talent right now. Javian Toviano and Ashton Stamps are getting the starting spots. Jair Brown, PJ Woodland, JK Johnson, Jeremiah Hughes are working in behind them. What do you think about this cornerback room right now? Anything from spring ball that you can take away? I think both of them are kind of still, you know, adjusting to Corey Raymond.
I think when you've been coaching for a head coach for 30 plus years, like Brian Kelly, you don't have it in you to lie about anything anymore. You sort of just tell the truth. Remember last summer at SEC Media Days when he was asked, what's your confidence level in your cornerbacks? And they had signed Denver Harris and Deuce Chestnut and four transfer corners.
Yeah.
And then they were going to have these young guys that were really moving positions to play corner. We, like you said, Stamps, Toviano, we saw the freshman play. And he honestly said, he didn't say, oh, we're going to be better, or, you know, I have high hopes. He said, I have no idea. I have no clue. We won't know until we get into the season and get a feel for it. And that was fair, because when we got to the season, Denver disappears. Deuce doesn't ever play after game one. Zai gets hurt. JK got hurt in camp. And you're relying on freshmen who then were learning on the run. So you didn't know what was to come in a variety of ways. I feel like this year they do know what they have. It's a combination of, A, getting guys healthy. Zai Alexander is a guy they expect back for summer workouts, and he transferred in from Southeastern a year ago. If you'll remember, he started at corner all the way up until he got injured. Now he's trying to get back from that knee injury. He was out there, excuse me, working off to the side, but it's good to see just doing some kind of just drill work by himself. But I think that JK, one of the Ohio State transfers, working through a little bit of a hamstring injury, he'll be fine. He was out there, but I think that's why PJ Woodland sort of stepped in, the true freshman early enrollee, to second team reps. It's clear to me, though, and we'll see. Look, Jair Brown, I've been told they have high hopes for, but we watch practice. Corey Raymond, after every rep, is yelling at every corner about technique. Yeah. And I think Jair Brown's just got to learn what they want from him here to become a viable option. I want to pencil Zai back in as a starter, but he's not healthy right now. So let's talk about just spring. I have tons of faith in Ashton Stamps. I love Javian Toviano. My worry with Toviano is the same with Sage Ryan in a way. His natural position is safety, and you're playing in him at corner because you still don't have enough options yet, or at least you want to keep him in that mix. He's doing well enough. He's developing that you feel good about it. But everyone knows I've been sky high on Stamps forever. I'm really intrigued to see how far Toviano from freshman to sophomore year can come, because I think he's an unbelievable football player. I just think if you're picking a position for him, the natural position, safety, given they have starters there already, I think they feel like, well, we might as well keep him at corner because he's getting first team reps there too.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have anything else on the cornerbacks, but I think J.K. Johnson.
I think that cornerback, we don't know anything till fall camp really, and then we'll get a feel.
Exactly. To round out the safeties real quick, Jordan Allen, Joel Rogers, backed up Jardine Gilbert, and Kylan Jackson and Deshaun McBride backed up Sage Ryan. Deshaun McBride, I thought, moved really well, like in space, like in the snaps that he got on third team, it looked like he was comfortable, and I think that is that can go a long way for him. I don't know if he'll contribute this year, but I feel better about him seeing him in person. He's still really thin, but he definitely
he's a big kid though. Good range of motion. Tall, rangy. I mean, he set Denham Springs interception record as a junior for a single season. So you know he's got ball skills. Anyone over there would tell you that it's the willing tackler that he needs to be better at. And that's most kids who are making the jump from high school to college. So that comes with time, but high hopes for him. You've always loved Kylan Jackson. He's a big physical presence back there. So in the post Gilbert Ryan Burns era, I do think they are lining up well at safety with guys like this, Rogers, McBride, Kylan Jackson, Jordan Allen's been on the team. More so than corner, I feel like they've got like a little natural transition set up. Corner's still sort of all up in the air of who could be out there and who couldn't be.
All right, let's move to the front seven or the front six, I guess, in this matter. We start with the linebacker spots. Harold Perkin and Greg Penn continue to kind of hold down that starting linebacker role. And then the Weeks brothers right behind them. And then Devon Keyes got some work in there and Christian Brathwaite on the third team. So I don't think personally, just from watching practice, I'm able to discern how much progress Harold Perkins is making. But I'll tell you this, Blake Baker is working his butt off trying to help him. So I'm really excited to see maybe in the spring game and then obviously in the fall what Harold looks like in when the bullets start flying a little bit more, because Blake Baker is working his tail off to try to get Harold where he needs to be, which is a great sign. Penn, you know, West, and I think maybe even Weeks to a degree probably have or definitely have a better understanding of what they're trying to do, even though it is a different defense. And Greg Penn talked about that in his interview this week. But Perkins, it's been a lot of hands-on work from Blake Baker so far. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's going to be an all off-season thing. Look, Blake Baker he's a DC and a linebackers coach who wears cleats to practice. Like, he is all in on mess up a drill, I'll show you how to do the bag drill. You know, a former Tulane player. Like I said, I want to see some Blake Baker Tulane College highlights. I'll have to dig them up somehow. But Baker is, I feel good about this group. Like at linebacker, especially with two of them, you're not playing like six linebackers a game. So I feel very good about the four that they have in Perkins, Penn. Penn made some good plays in practice. Penn will lead the team in tackles again. And then the Weeks brothers backing them up. I think Witt makes a big jump from year one to year two. He's talked about that. So I feel very good about that group. I feel the best about the linebackers than I do any position group on defense. And it's because they were already in a good spot. Here's my thing with Perkins. Any LSU fans are like this whole, like, well, the first year he was all over the place as an edge rusher. And then he disappeared at times in year two, even though the stats looked similar. Just watching games, it felt like there were stretches he disappeared. Blake Baker is coming back to a school where he coached 2 years ago. He recruited Harold Perkins. He was in a conference watching Harold Perkins go wild out there and then gets brought in as the DC. For me, Matty B, the worry level is very low that he won't figure out how to make Perkins an impact player. And I say that not just because he's a very good coach who has shown that he can make very talented linebackers into really game changers, but he's a smart enough coach to where he's taken over a roster and it's like, all right, play defense. Well, one of your players is Herb Jones. Like, you're not going to ignore him and just like brush him off to the side and not put everything you can into saying, how do we make this guy the star of the defense? And that's where I'm at with Blake Baker right now. I think he this offseason is in that mindset of, all right, he's the best defender on this team, raw talent wise. How do I get him to that next level? I have little doubt that he will be productive this season to a point where it's very noticeable. It's not just showing up on the stat sheet, but you're like, man, I don't even remember any big plays.
Yeah. Shea Dixon, huge Herb Jones fan.
Alabama grad, I know, but boy, Pell star and often underappreciated NBA defensive snub, player of the year snub, first team snub.
You want to get Shea going. You want to get Shea going and ask him about Herb Jones.
But yes, I unless you think differently, I think that Blake Baker probably goes to bed at night thinking about how do I get Harold Perkins to the best.
If there's anybody that can do what Harold Perkins is attempting to do, or maybe to help Harold get to the point that he needs to get to, it's Blake Baker. Like, and I talked about this during the offseason. Like, a lot of this is now on Harold. A lot of this, year three, you have to go all out in film. You have to go all out studying the playbook. You have to do all of this work because you don't have the benefit of Whit Weeks or Greg Penn, where you are naturally kind of an inside linebacker guy. You have to do more than all of those guys before practice, after practice, with Coach Baker, during practice. And so a lot of it is on Harold, and a lot of it's on Coach Baker. And we'll see. Like I said, spring game, we'll see some. Fall camp, we'll see more. And but it is interesting to watch spring practices where Blake Baker is so hands-on with everything. So,
yeah.
Defensive
you want to go interior first, or do you want to go on the edges? You pick which one, and I'll start us out.
The edge is a lot more fun, so let's start.
All right,
there.
Well, let's rip the Band-Aid off first. Oh. Let's talk about the interior.
Okay. You asked me which one, and then you went with the other.
Yeah,
one.
I'm going to choose the other. It's not your birthday anymore. That was yesterday. You did your three deep here, and I'm looking at it on the interior of the D line. Whether you're calling these guys tackles or nose tackles or whatever, these are the two guys that are playing on your interior and starting. Jacobian Guillory and Jalen Lee, backed up by Sean Washington, a JUCO signee, and Preston Hickey, who transferred in from Oklahoma State 2 years ago, or this past year, coming out of the North Shore in Louisiana. And then you've got a Westgate signee, an early enrollee in Demarion Johnson. You've got an offensive line, converted offensive lineman in Kimo Makaneole as a third string DT behind Lee and Hickey. And then you'll get some more guys this summer to campus, including most notably a five-star signee, a defensive tackle, and Dominic McKinley, but he will be a freshman. I'm not going to speak because we didn't see enough in 2 hours, and we haven't seen enough practices yet to like truly where they're at. And if this is like so desperate, or they actually like some of these guys, but I can just look at this list and I don't know. Let me Google Jacobian Guillory real quick. Jacobian Guillory, LSU. I don't believe he made any starts this past year because Mason and Makai, no. Maybe he made one or two.
It would be a surprise to me. I don't think so.
Three career starts. So I'm looking at a group of six guys for two positions, and you've got two career starts at LSU in the group.
Two or three. Okay.
Beyond talent, beyond depth is what I'm speaking of, but beyond any of that, simply experience isn't there. Like, yeah, Jalen Lee is an older guy, went to Florida and came back to LSU, and Washington was on a Georgia team that won a national championship, but he was a freshman who redshirted, and then he played JUCO ball. Like, Guillory is the only guy who's been at LSU and started games in three starts. So just watching, I mean, out at practice, Mason Smith and Makai Wingo were out there watching. You lose that production, and what you have coming up is three starts between six guys, some of them being freshmen, one of them being a converted O-lineman. I think it's just becoming more and more evident, Matty B, that even with the arrival of McKinley this summer, all that, two defensive tackles maybe out of the portal this spring would not surprise me. And we've got a story up now with an interview with one of the tackles they're after out of the transfer portal. You can check that out. He's coming from Indiana, spoke highly of LSU's, got a visit lined up. But just thinking of that, Matty B, when I say, all right, you've got two tackle positions, your entire depth chart out there for spring, and I'm counting three total starts coming from really a guy who's been a career backup, they need more experience than that. So spring portal window craziness, if it's going to affect LSU, it's going after DTs.
Yeah, especially I think, you know, Gabe Rutherford right now is a defensive end to them right now. I watched the defensive tackle spots. I didn't see him get worked in there. Maybe I missed him, but he's listed on the roster as a defensive end. I think his height and weight, you know, kind of scream defensive end right now at this point in his career. Not saying he can't move inside at some point, but early enrollee during spring, I think a lot of it is going to be getting him in motion, you know, figuring out where he's best, where he wants to play, where he can play, and, you know, getting eyes on him. So yeah, the defensive tackle position was jarring.
Ahmad Bro out of Ruston, state title team, coming off of the best defense in the state, arguably, is also a guy that they had kind of moved inside and said that maybe he would play there. So they're trying to find depth.
Well, it's for Bro, I've seen it kind of both. I've seen him do some inside, but then I see him on the edge in some drill work, I think in the 20-minute sections we saw. So it's kind of just – it's all over the place right now, especially with those two. Like I said, McKinley will help, but at this moment, there's just not enough – I mean, there's not enough on this defensive tackle – in this defensive tackle spot to have any faith, really. I do think – I will say this. Jacobian Guillory in one-on-ones had a few really strong reps. We know how strong he is. And sometimes in one-on-ones, that kind of just overwhelms the other person, especially when he's not going against starters like, you know, Frazier or Jones or whoever. Sometimes the strength is really, really impressive. So I wrote about that in the story. Sean Washington, I think, also has shown flashes. So those two are probably the best two defense tackles to me. Now, Jalen Lee is more of like a nose, can, you know, kind of plug the run a little bit more. So that's, you know, when you talk about him and Chemo and Preston Hickey, like that's their job will just be to eat blocks, but you still need more production. You still need more experience. You still need more bodies. You need better players. Like this is a massive, massive concern, I think, going into, at least.
And look, guys like Lee will get for and Guillory, but they'll get first team reps. Guys like Hickey and Sean Washington getting second team reps. The guy who moves over from the O-line and Macanioli is getting reps out there with third team. They're putting him into the mix. So at least these guys will have the spring to get a bunch of practice reps under their belt before you get to fall camp, potentially have the arrival of some transfers, but also Dominic McKinley and the rest of your D-line crop. So it'll be interesting. I think that's another one, much like corner. We won't in fall camp. We'll really get a feel for, okay, what's the depth chart here? Like who do they really prefer? I think it's evident that the interior of the D line and corner are two spots we have to wait and see on. That might not be the case for what would be your end spots or your end and your edge rushers. Maddie B, Savion Jones started at D end a year ago, backed up by Paris Shand. You've got both them back. Plus you've got Dylan Carpenter going into year three. And then at that edge spot, you've got Braden Swinson, who takes over for Ovia Gofu and is probably better than a Gofu in spots a year ago. He's starting now, backed up by Deshaun Womack, who is your five-star freshman from a year ago that certainly will have a bigger role in year two. And then Jackson Howard, son of a former first-round pick in the NFL draft on the D-line, but a guy who they raved about in spring drills or in bowl practice and then is now getting a good work in the spring, healthy. Should have a good year too. So we could sit here and debate. Like I know people are low on Savion Jones or didn't think he had a great year. He should move inside. He's not doing any of that. And he's still getting first team reps. Like this is the same for me with like Greg Penn or Major Burns. People will complain about it. The reality is the coaches see something in them that's keeping them at first team and out there getting the reps. So will I be shocked if Paris Shand and a guy like or Jones and Shan maybe split, you know, like get a little more even in reps? No, I mean, and maybe that's a good thing. Womack, does he kind of get the Swinson feel of, yeah, Swinson starts, but Womack gets to come in or he plays on third down or whatever it might be? Sure. I feel good about those spots. And look, Relaford's back there. They've got players there. So maybe I feel like at the end spot, like I do with the linebackers, the end and the edge of, I'm not too worried about it. I think they've got at least a couple players at each spot who have a combination of experience and are pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I think the defensive end, honestly, it's pretty exciting. Like you said, and then you get to the freshmen that are coming in that we like as well. So Swinson, Womack looked good in spring camp. I think they're just so athletic off the edge. It is similar to like B.J. Ojulari when you watched him and just how rangy and how athletic he was. You get that feel with Deshaun Womack and Swinson. And I'm curious to see in this defense as we continue to watch, you know, spring and fall, how they're used. Whereas last year, you know, Jack linebackers, you know, that's that position where you had to play the pass a little bit. Sometimes you had to guard a flat. You had to take a tight end out in, you know, 5 yards out. Like this is feels like a different position where they won't have as much pass coverage responsibility, which I like, especially considering I think Swinton and Womack are two premier pass rushers, and I think they need to be in attack mode as much as possible. So yeah, not huge takeaways from them this spring, but or at least not yet. We'll see. They still have another half of spring ball to play, but I love this, those two position groups, defensive end and edge.
I'll wrap up defense by saying this, which I kind of hinted at the beginning of my overarching thoughts here, and I wrote about it. They finished outside the top 100 in pretty much every notable defensive category, total defense, scoring defense, whatever you want to say, Maddie B, a year ago. And that's why they were so poor and lost three games. The offense finished number one in the country. Your defense finished outside the top 100. One of the biggest disparities possible. There's only, what, 130, how many teams?
133.
So they finished 108, kind of in that range in total defense. So I looked at the numbers and I wrote about this. They're not going to snap their fingers and have one of the best defenses in America, because while you may have hired great coaches, you still got to recruit, you have to develop, and you don't snap your fingers and overnight have a new roster. Like all these guys we just talked about, the majority of which were on the team a year ago. We saw them play. We know what they bring to the table. You hope that in your, you know, this next year in transition to a new staff that they make a jump. A year ago, when they finished outside the top 100, they gave up 416 yards per game. I said, I'd like to just see them get into the top 60. That would be giving up 372 yards a game. Top 50 is about 370. So cutting out 40 to 50 yards a game. Then in points per game, they allowed 28 points per game last year. That was 80th in the country. Top 50 is teams allowing 24 and fewer. So can they shave off 40 to 50 yards a game and a field goal or 4 points?
Yeah.
Can you make that kind of jump? Because if you do, you're going to be a top 60 defense in total defense and scoring. And yes, you won't have the number one offense, but I don't think that falls off all that much. We'll talk about offense in a minute, but
yeah,
is that possible? I think that's the biggest question. Like, yeah, we can put every player under the microscope, all that, but can they as a unit shave off 50 yards a game and maybe a field goal?
Yeah. It's a good way of looking at it. I like that, laying it out like that for sure. All right.
Offense, which is people care a lot less about. It's so funny going through spring where people aren't talking about a quarterback battle or just what the offense looks like. And I think it's because we've now seen they've had, yes, Jaden Daniels is an amazing Heisman winner, but the offense is a good one. They transitioned from Denbrock to Sloan. It looked fine in the bowl game for a, you know, really was a test run. They come back and win the game. Yes, you've got a new quarterback in Nussmeier. But you look around the SEC, I mean, you're not facing 10 Heisman winners everywhere. Like Nussmeier is a probably middle of the pack SEC quarterback right now who only has one start under his belt. I mean, they've got a backup in AJ Swan on the team who came in from Vanderbilt. He's got double digit starts under his belt. So no, Nuss doesn't have the experience, but we've seen him enough to know what we're getting. Look, it was just one practice. He had a ball thrown into wind. He had a ball picked off. And then in situational work, Sage jumped a route. And I was asking, talking to some sources after about it. And they said, yeah, that's, look, it is on us. But in the reality, when we do 2-minute drill situational work every day, every week, often we're running a lot of the same stuff. And Sage saw that we were running the exact same play that he had jumped a week ago and didn't make the pick. Then he does. So it is on us. Obviously, don't make that throw. But at the same time, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you're facing each other and it's scripted and you kind of already know what's coming. I'm not really worried about Nuss. And I don't think really we have to dive too much into quarterbacks, because in the 2 hours we got to see, Colin Hurley wasn't out there much. They gave the reps to Ricky Collins and AJ Swan. I think AJ Swan is the backup to this team. You don't take a guy with double digit SEC starts and not have him out there if something were to go wrong, like Nussmeier gets banged up. That being said, I thought Ricky made some good plays this when we got to watch him, and did get some reps that I think he needs to further develop his game, because that's where he's at right now. He's raw. He's still only a year in. He's played in one game ever and threw two passes that were incomplete. He needs these reps in spring, and I think Sloan's given it to him. Like, I don't think AJ Swan is as desperate for those reps.
No. I think you laid it out well. The Nussmeier interceptions, they kept putting the offense going against the wind. And I was wondering why, like, even in one-on-one drills and stuff, and it was complete, like, the wind was blowing. Like, the little flags on the uprights were going.
Conditions won't always be ideal, Maddie. Yes, you can't choose it in the game. Well, you can at the coin flip, but then you can't choose it from there.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the one deep ball, like, even the crazy catch that Lacy had, which we'll talk about, where he, like, came back and caught it, it was because the throw was fine, and then it just, like, stopped in midair and died. And the same thing happened on one of Sage's interceptions. One of them was tipped, and one of them, like you said, was situational, jumped a route. So good for Sage. Not worried about Garrett at all there. I think he's been really good from I thought he had a really good practice other than those, like, those plays. Yeah, Ricky got a lot of snaps. Ricky, I honestly was impressed. I think he's made progress. AJ, like you said, doesn't need the reps. And I think at this moment, and I think going into fall, AJ will still be the backup. And that will be the plan, at least for the first few games of the season. But Ricky, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged because he looked, to say he looked lost last year, and every time we watched a practice, that might be an understatement. Now, you know, March 25th, about a year into being at LSU, I think he's made real progress. I don't know, you know, where his career takes him, I don't know, but that's good for him that he's made tangible progress and he's, you know, getting these type of reps.
O-line might be one of the easiest ones to talk about. Well, outside of running backs, there's only two of them right now, but O-line, they are so good. They bring back four starters. Emory Jones has been a little bit limited, but obviously it's not serious because he was in full pads doing individual work, making contact, doing sled drill stuff. But when they went 11-on-11, they let him rest and they put Tyree Adams in. We've talked about Tyree Adams on the board. I mean, people forget he was a borderline top 100 recruit coming out of high school. It was just that he was a New Orleans kid and committed early. And everyone was like, oh, well, he was always going to go to LSU, even though other SEC schools had offered. It was a given. But you start Will Campbell and Emory Jones, and it's like, oh, you know, you don't really think about Tyree Adams. Well, he's evidently been tearing it up as a backup left tackle. And now it's evident that he is their backup tackle because Emory Jones, not in there, moved him to the right side and he played right tackle. So just a note there, your backup tackle, your first guy off the bench is Tyree Adams right now. But Emory and Will Campbell will start. You've obviously got Dellinger and Frazier back at guard, and then DJ Chester at center, who we don't have to talk about much. He's a redshirt freshman, but he did get to play in some games last year, a really key stretch in the fourth quarter of Missouri on the road to come in and get the win. There's buzz, Maddie B, but, and you said this before, that the O-line might be stronger than it was a year ago. And that's not a knock on Charles Turner. It's just DJ Chester's a good player. And if he can settle in and get things rolling, that they're going to be in a good spot. Like, yes, you replace one person and it's the center, but they love DJ Chester.
Well, and he's just bigger and stronger. Yeah. Like he's
well, Charles Turner was never a natural. He got put there. Like, DJ Chester knew coming in, I'm probably going to be playing some center. So
yeah, like, this is a big dude, DJ Chester. We knew that out of high school, how big he was and strong he was.
And not so fat. I mean, he's put together. His legs are massive. He carries his weight well in the upper body, strong. Look, he was a state champ in shot put and discus. So you get kind of a feel for the punch he has coming out of Georgia now a year in the program. So I love the O-line. I'm good there. And running back, they only have two of them right now. Trey Holly, obviously, not with the team as he goes through his legal stuff. So Caleb Jackson and Josh Williams are your scholarship running backs. Josh Williams has been on the team forever. Matty B, we know what he does. He's a three down back. He's a vet. He's never gonna mess it up for you in any way. And he always seems to get 3 or 4 yards. And he popped a few runs in practice whenever we watched on Saturday. But certainly this offseason, I think, is about getting Caleb Jackson up to speed, more reps, because boy, as a true freshman, you saw what he could do. Now in year two, presumed starter, right?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And yeah, I would pencil him as a starter. Josh Williams has gotten all the, like, the starting reps.
Yeah, I think they'll split. You know, like, I don't think it matters who really start. I think Caleb Jackson will have more carries by the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree. But just sticking on spring right now, I think my biggest offensive takeaway has been how much they've ran the ball when they do 11-on-11 stuff. And obviously, this was our first full practice, but they ran the ball probably 70% of those snaps, and I wasn't used to that. Because, you know, you can, in a lot of ways, in those 11-on-11s, like, it's a glorified 7-on-7, but you have, you know, all 11 players. You have your blockers and whatnot. At least in the past few years, that's what it had been. This time, they were running the ball at the defense's face. And sure enough, Brian Kelly afterwards was like, yeah, that's what we've been working on those concepts, working on getting our tackles more involved in the run game and how we can pull them, how we can do zone runs. The amount of times they ran the ball and worked on their run game and run blocking, that's my biggest takeaway of the offense so far. They are committed to trying to figure out, how can we maximize the run game now with this with the offensive line, the same offensive line, I should say, and pretty much the same running backs, Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson, but we don't have Jaden Daniels.
Yes, so that's the key, right?
That's what they've been working on, and that's my biggest takeaway so far, is how much they've been working on that.
And that's a positive, because look, Jaden was your running back basically for 2 years. Like, he was the one that led the team in rushing, had the most carries, all that. With Nussmeier, and I'm not even going to get it. Yes, Nussmeier can run the football. He's fast. He's a pocket passer. He isn't a dual threat quarterback like Jaden is. So for so long in those 2 years, Matty B, people complained, well, Denbrock is not versatile enough in run packages. Like, when it comes to the run game, especially year one of the Kelly era, they couldn't run the football. It got better as time went on in year two, certainly. But to see Joe Sloan in this offense committed out of the gates to saying, let's shake up the run game. Let's find all these kind of new ways to not new ways to run the football, but let's diversify how we're running the football. And as you noted, doing a lot of different stuff with offensive linemen. And I think it obviously always starts there. And a big focus, as Brian Kelly says, is not just Caleb Jackson or Josh Williams or Caden Durham coming in or Trey Holly coming back. It's what these 5-0 linemen can do with what they're asking them to do in the run game now. And it's going to be more than they asked them to do a year ago and 2 years ago when Jaden was your quarterback. So I'm all for the focus this spring, because I think that's where it's needed. I don't think the passing game needs as much focus as the run game when it comes to just getting real practice reps. So I like seeing that, like hearing it from Brian Kelly. We know tight ends will be involved this year. Mason Taylor had his best game of the year when Nussmeier was a quarterback against Wisconsin, and he will catch a million of those, like, 5 to 7 yard outs or even the ones where he just kind of comes in motion across the line of scrimmage, and then you kind of either hand it off or you just kind of dump it out to him in the flat. I think he's just going to rack those up this year. Like, not sit back and have to run all these deep routes. Like, you can catch him quickly on plays.
Yeah, I think Mason's looked spry. I mean, talking to him this week, you could tell how frustrated he was last year, partially at his performance, partially at his injury. But then also, I think very bluntly after having the freshman year that he had to not be the focal point of the offense or a focal point of the offense in any way, maybe, you know, bothered him a little bit to that point to where it was, hey, we have Malika, we have Brian, and we have Jane Daniels. And it was just like everything was them, which obviously it worked. They were a great offense. But for him, I think coming into last year, he had expectations of being, you know, one of those guys, and they just didn't need him. And yeah. So this year they need him, and he knows that. And so now there was just a different like kind of edge about him when we talked to him in the interviews to where I think he really wants this year. He wants to get however, you know, 50 catches or 45 catches for however many yards and be one of the best tight ends in the SEC. And so I think he will be. He's looked good. His ankle was bothering him a little last year. I think he's back from that. Mac Markway's gotten all the second team reps. Now, you know, I think the obvious question for a lot of people is, where's Kamorian Pimpton? He's working. He's working in there, but I don't know how much farther, like, when will he take that jump? You know, if and when he will take that jump is going to decide when he gets on the field, because at this moment, I expected to see more of them utilizing him in the spring, and he hasn't been on the field as much.
He made a nice play in one-on-one drills to score, and then
yeah.
I mean, Kylan Jackson had to leave practice because they jawed at each other and then decided to fight with helmets on, which is always a brilliant strategy of swinging fists with guys wearing helmets. But
yeah,
they both had to have a cooling off period and didn't get to come back to the two-hour practice we saw. Do I think that Kamorian Pimpton's going out there and catching 25 balls this year? No. But I do think that you're not signing a 6'6" and a half guy like him, followed by Trey Des Green, a 5-star who is the exact same type of player, catch radius out of this world, to not use them in some capacity or not develop them. And that'll be on Slade Nagel, the new tight ends coach, who is an excellent tight ends coach and has done it for a long time. And this offensive staff, Sloan and them, to see, hey, beyond Markway and Mason Taylor, what can we get from these guys? And Pimpton, being the guy who's already been here a year, that's the one you want to see step up. So let's give him the offseason, right? Like, then we get into year two. He's a redshirt freshman or second-year player. We'll see how he fares. Not too worried about it there. I do think Mason Taylor will eat up the majority of the catches anyways, and I have no problem with that. But I am interested to see if they do get Pimpton involved, because I think he's a really good player. And then Does Green do anything as a freshman? I'm not sure, because look, a year ago, yes, Pimpton didn't do anything as a freshman, but as you noted, neither did their starter in Mason Taylor, because kind of Jayden just did it all. So
exactly.
With the need for more tight end, do we see those guys? Maybe, but we won't judge it off of just one practice, or we're not even midway through spring ball yet, or kind of almost hitting the midway point. I will say this, though, as we wrap up the pod here, receivers, we've saved them till the end, Matty B. Talking to sources, least shocking thing you'll probably hear, Kyron Lacy is expected to be no doubt their starter, like their number one receiver, and finish the year with the most catches and the most yards. Multiple sources I've talked to have been around practices feel that way. I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to say I'm surprised by this. Maybe I'm surprised by the confidence level they speak with. A lot of them are convinced now, across the board, that Chris Hilton's the second best receiver on this team. Thoughts on that? Because you've got a Xavien Thomas coming in, you've got a from Mississippi State, and you've got a player in CJ Daniels coming in from Liberty, who went over 1,000 yards and had double digit touchdowns last year. Only 11 players in college football did that. Malik and Brian Thomas were two of them. CJ Daniels was a third out of 11. I'm just a little surprised to hear, and maybe it's, look, CJ will be third on the team or whatever, but with Chris Hilton healthy and having a strong offseason, I've never heard them have this much confidence in what he can do.
I don't know if I said this before, but it's almost like, it's almost forced. Like, his hand is forced at this point. This is the year, the ocean is kind of paved for Chris Hilton here to get a lot of reps, and especially in the spring, to where you're healthy, the two Goliaths are gone, you should be in the starting lineup or the starting rotation here. CJ Daniels and Xavion Thomas, we know what they can do as receivers, but they're transfers. It's going to take time for Hankton to trust them. They have to learn everything from route trees to getting on the same page as Nussmeier and so on. Like, Daniels and Thomas not being first team, I don't think is a surprise. I think that's kind of what we've always expected as far as like transfers working their way in spring ball. Hilton, when I watch him in spring practices, he's incredibly athletic. We know that. He's incredibly fast. I'm interested to see if he's ready to make the routine plays on a consistent basis. That's where Kyren Lacy kind of had to get to that point. You know, he was really athletic, fast, and everything. It became down to him, like Brian Kelly said, taking on practice in a different way, being able to do the routine things every single time. I don't know. Like, Hilton's looked good in practice. He's super athletic. He tries to make all the highlight plays. I just need to see it in, I guess, a game setting or and whatnot. But it's not shocking that he's getting first team run, but I just need to see it like sustained a little bit. I need to see the routine things done on a consistent basis. We know you can go up and make incredible grabs because you can jump 10 feet in the air, and we know you're really fast, but
you know, that's the thing. Everyone just thinks about him being a burner. You got to remember, this is a kid as a freshman at Zachary that won state in the high jump by going 7 foot. Like,
jumps incredibly high. Just, I mean,
we saw him make one play, and yeah, we were watching. I think it just went out of bounds, but like, they threw one to the corner, and like, the cornerback did everything in his power to try to jump up. And like, Chris doesn't even have to do it. Like, so effortlessly just jumps like 2 feet higher than the DB can even get. So. Yeah. I'm high faith in him. Here's the thing. And they talked about it. Brian Kelly talked about it last year. Only 5 receivers caught a pass, and really it was the neighbors Thomas show with kind of a side dish of Lacy. Aaron Anderson caught a few passes. Hilton caught a few passes. This year, they're going to have more than 5 guys catch passes, because we just listed 2 that are presumed starters. You got 2 transfers that are proven. That's 4. I've talked to a number of sources, and we've seen it in practices. Aaron Anderson's catching the ball well, and he's healthy. That's 5. Then you still got guys like Kyle Parker, who are getting first-team reps at times as a redshirt freshman. You've got Ibietta, who's going to come back from his injury. You got Shelton Sampson as a redshirt freshman in year 2, trying to make that jump to say, all right, I want to work my way into getting some playing time. So I think they'll go a little bit deeper into the bag this year, right? Like, last year, as you said, we got neighbors Thomas and Lacy. Let's roll. Like, we're good. I think this year they'll test more out, and that's a good thing. They'll have more options.
Parker getting first team reps, I mean, it doesn't mean it. Like, it was Lacy, Parker, and Anderson briefly, and then they changed that, I think, to Lacy, Hilton, Anderson or Thomas, one of those two. Like, a lot of these guys are going to work in. I don't know, even if into the fall, how set like the starting receivers are going to be, to your point of them being more diverse. Like, there are going to be 5 guys that have like 25 receptions this year, something like that. Like, I don't think it's going to be overwhelming. Lacy will lead the team, but the 2 through 5 on this team, I think, is all going to be very, very tight. Parker, I am encouraged by watching him. We all know how good he was out of high school, but it was like, where can he take that next step? And I think he's starting to do that. Shelton Sampson has been a little bit underwhelming to me just watching practice. We all know how like physically talented he is.
Yeah, I think naturally gifted athlete.
Naturally gifted athlete. And he had a touchdown reception down the near sideline when we were watching practice. So like, we know he can make plays. Kind of like Hilton to a degree, but it's like, you have to make the routine plays every single time. Like, you can't just have a spectacular play and then a drop, you know, or you can't shake a corner and get separation. You're not strong enough. Like, Sampson to me still has work to do. And like, similar to Pimpton, like, this is early. They've been here for 1 year now. The fall camp will tell us a lot more about these sophomores, and they're not even technically sophomores yet, but these sophomores than spring camp. So I think that runs everybody. I still think CJ Daniels is damn good. Like, just watching him, like, he can play football. I don't want to overlook how good
he CJ can Daniels He can also – he can route some people up. I mean, he was leaving some of the DBs in one-on-one drills kind of looking foolish off of, you know, goal line plays and stuff like that where he would just
– I mean, he looked exactly how we expect a 22, 23-year-old to look, a transfer that had 1,000 yards last year.
And look, this is – people are wondering, Xavion Thomas from State and CJ Daniels from Liberty, your two transfer receivers, getting second-team reps. Should you be concerned? No. I think it's like any spring practice. You get new guys in and you have guys who are already on the team and you have the same receivers coach. He's going to put those guys second and say, watch what these guys do. Here's how we do it. And then, you know, take it from there, learn on the fly as we go through these practices. So I would have been shocked if they would have rolled out like a first team unit all spring of Lacey and then the two transfers and not been like, hey, let's give the guys who are coming back the first team reps. Let's let these guys play catch up. And I think that's what they're doing right now. So a deep receiver room. But again, boy, people are sky high right now on two returning guys in Lacey and Hilton. Even had one source say, mark it, book it, Shea. Lacey will be a 1,000-yard receiver this year.
Feels right.
Okay.
That should happen. I mean, if anybody's
going to – I think I said 700 or something once on the pod previously. So now –
I mean, if he's going to be, if we expect him to be the leading receiver, I think the leading receiver at LSU should, even with everything I said of five players having really good seasons, I think Lacey should have 1,000 yards. If the offense is as good as we think, like the leading receiver should. Now, whether that's Lacey or Daniels or hell, maybe Hilton, someone should have 1,000 yards here. And then the rest fill in at like 600, 700, 500, 400, like that, those range for the rest. Because I expect Nussmeier to have put up really good numbers this year. So there should be enough mouths to feed.
And that's it. If you, I guess, and I think they're in a better quarterback spot than they were then. Obviously, in the Burrow years, they had, well, the first Burrow year, they didn't have any 1,000-yard receivers, but second, multiple. Much like with Daniels, the first year, Neighbors hit 1,000 yards, about 17 yards. Year two of Daniels, you've got two guys over, well over 1,000 yards. And then you were in that stretch in COVID in the year after, where Butte, Terrace Marshall, Jenkins, and really the following year, like Jack Besh was playing a lot in 2021. Butte and Jenkins were still on the team. Neighbors was on that team. Thomas was on that team. Trey Palmer was on that team in 2021, where no one had more than like 500 something yards, but like five guys had 500 yards or something like that.
Isn't
I think they're in a better quarterback spot than they were in those years, though.
Isn't it crazy? Maybe I think I don't think enough of 1,000 yards, because 1,000 yards is 77 yards per game. And for over 13 games, 1,000 divided by 13 is 77. And that's pretty
because you've been watching Heisman quarterbacks
throw
to first round picks. That's pretty easy.
We've been watching 100 yards per game the past, you know, or that the past year. So, but yeah, 77 yards per game would be really, really impressive. So I'm interested. We'll see if Lace can get there. Last thing. Punt returners, Xavion's been going first team. Kyle Parker's been working in there. And then Javon Nicholas, the walk-on. He might be the new Greg Clayton
He was the up-back a year ago, so maybe he'll do that again.
Exactly. So those are the three I've seen on punt return. Just to
you brought Xavion Thomas here to return punts and play receiver, but he's been one of the best punt returner, return specialists, kick returners as well in the SEC the past 2 years. It's got to be his job. Has to be.
I'm glad we don't have to spend a lot of time on special teams anymore.
That's it. I'm moving on. all right. We said before the podcast, we were like, oh, we don't have to go long. And here we went an hour. But it's your LSU football rundown for the day, people.
Yeah. When's our next full viewing? Do you know?
It's in April. So we still have a little bit there.
So I know we have 20 minutes Tuesday and then Pro Day on Wednesday.
Yeah, so. Pro Day on Wednesday. We'll see what the guys do back here in Baton Rouge. But certainly. A lot of NFL, all 32 NFL teams will be there.
Shea,
I think one team was trying to bring their entire staff.
I mean,
The Commanders.
The Bears, Commanders, one of these teams up top. The Commanders.
A lot of people thinking Jaden will go 2 overall, but Brian Thomas has shot up boards. He'll be a first-round pick, and the debate is on if Malik or Marvin Harrison Jr. Are the first wide receiver taken. So,
and then I will sneak out there and run a 40-yard dash. And report back my time.
We had a media pro day once. Your time's gone.
I know.
We don't need you doing any of that.
If we still had that, I would be training for it. Maybe not training for it. It's wrong.
You already play basketball and tennis. That's training.
Yeah,
training would be the rest of us who do nothing all the time and then would have to like go walk to be able to do it.
Yeah, I can see why they stopped it. It's just dangerous. It's dangerous. Right.
No, the best part of that is I just remember, well, one, twofold. But there was some injuries that day, a broken collarbone, wasn't great, but the two highlights, Luke Johnson, who writes for the Advocate in New Orleans, covers the Saints, went to LSU, buddy of mine, but he was in the military forever. So when he was like repping and everything, it was completely unfair. He was coming straight, not many years out the military. He was crushing 32 reps, whatever, you know. But also WFB at the time, might have been BRZ, one of the news stations, one of their interns or younger people had just graduated from Southern where he had played football. So he like, came in there and just like shredded the pro day. And I was like, all right, come on. This is supposed to be fun. This guy's out here jumping 37-inch verts and running 4.4s. Not very fun for us.
Oh, my gosh. The leaderboard would have been crazy. Yeah, it's just him and then everybody else.
Massive drop.
There you go. But all right. That's all we got for y'all today. Hope y'all enjoyed the episode. Leave a like, comment, share, subscribe to the YouTube if you have not already. Thank you all for listening on Spotify, Apple, wherever you are checking us out. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Bengal Tiger. Basketball offseason is about to, I mean, it's already underway, really, even though the women are still playing. We got portal news on the basketball side coming multiple times a week, so be on the lookout for that. And then always, as always, it is recruiting season. Billy and Shay are the best in the business at that. So, yeah, thank you all for joining us. We will be back later in the week, and we will talk to y'all then.